another day, another dollar makes you wonder where your money went. You can scream.
Hi, this is Chad Spirko. Welcome to another edition of the Survival Podcast, one man's view of the world and changing times and what we can do about it to live better lives. I'm dictating on a 50-mile commute. Just so happens that today is a 50-mile commute in the morning on the way to work rather than the way home to the office. It's a little cooler than yesterday right now, 82 degrees in the Dallas-Fort Worth area. We're expecting another scorcher over 100 degrees, so I may have the AC blaring full blast in my little Jetta on the way home, and I may not have time to do a show this afternoon, so I decided to go ahead and get one out of the way this morning, and hopefully we can have a good time with it. Today's topic is going to be about being more energy efficient, less impactful on the environment with your energy consumption. And the big thing is trying to figure out ways to spend less money on energy. See, I'm not really an environmentalist in the traditional sense. I don't think that every time you get in your car, if it happens to be a big car or a truck, you're killing the planet because you've burned evil fossil fuel and you have a carbon footprint. I don't even entertain the concept of carbon footprint. There's so many things that we're doing that are worse for the environment than turning a light bulb on that happens to be an incandescent bulb, running our stoves or driving a frickin' Ford F-150 that are so much worse for the environment. Those things are not the big, we're all going to die, Greenland's going to melt, and we're going to drown in a giant flood catastrophe that people lead you to believe. The global climate people that are actually honest with us, that are believers in man-made global warming, but they're doing it scientifically, are talking about possibly a one-inch rise in the next 100 years of the seas, if everything continues to go the way that it is. And we have leading climatologists out there, folks, that say that we are ending our warming period as we speak, and we're going to go into a global cooling period again like we had in the 70s. Not because of smog, not because of man, and not because of carbon or methane, but because the sun is changing its activity pattern, and that's what it's done for the 4 billion plus years it's been around. That's what it's going to continue to do, and we have very little effect on the direct climate change. I happen to believe that. I still think that when you look around and you see 50 billion cars driving all over the place, that the stuff that comes out of that tailpipe isn't good for us, and it isn't good for the planet. Even if it's not going to melt everything down, it would be better if we used less oil. It would cost us less if we used less oil. We would be less beholden to foreign powers if we used less oil, so less oil is good. Less of everything that we consume is good. Less pollution and less dependence, and that's what today's podcast is going to be about. Common sense ways to do it, and ways that are intelligent because they put money back into your pocket, back into your family budget, and reduce your individual dependence. See, I'm also not a big political activist anymore. I used to be a pretty heavy conservative political activist, and then I became more of a libertarian political activist that even ran for the state house in the state of Texas as a libertarian, unsuccessfully, might I add. So I was that involved as an activist. I realize now that we can make a difference in mass, but until there's a psychology shift in the public, until the public stops depending on the government, we're not getting one. So what can you do as an individual is you can control your individual dependence, and as an activist, which I figure I am now as a podcast show host, I can help other people do that for themselves. And I don't think that we're going to change the planet overnight. I don't think we're going to change the political structure of the United States in the next 10 or 20 years, that there's going to have to be this crash before people wake up to reality. So everything I do, everything that I teach, everything that I preach is around you controlling your life and you within this system that we're forced into making the best do that you can. So let's look at that from an energy standpoint and see where we can go with it from there. So let's start with everybody's favorite alternative energy source and also the biggest source of global warming that we have, our sun. Solar energy is in its infancy at this point, folks. You have to understand is that the belief that we could run our entire country in solar, even in a decade, if we really got at it, is a little bit, what's the word I'm looking for? A little bit pie in the sky, a little bit idealistic, that's the word. Sometimes it's hard to come up with a word when you're driving 70 miles an hour on a five-lane highway. Anyway, idealistic. So, that doesn't mean that you can't incorporate solar power into your own lives and use solar energy in your own lives in smart ways that are going to have an impact for you. And if enough people do that, eventually will impact the whole. The starting point, though, is ourselves. So, to me, the most overlooked way that the individual can utilize solar energy, I think everybody would love to be able to put some solar panels on the roof, disconnect themselves from the grid, have a great big bank of batteries, and be able to live a very comfortable life on solar power alone. And some people do it, but it's a huge investment. I mean, it costs as much as maybe a small house to do that. It's very difficult. But one thing that the sun does, and we see it here in Texas a lot, is it makes things hot. And the main thing that you heat in your home that drains electricity and energy is water. Excuse me. Anyway, you use hot water every time you take a shower. And that can be, for a family of four, as much as 30% of the cost of their energy consumption, be it if they heat with gas or electricity, it doesn't really matter, or oil. So, you know, how do you do passive hot water heating? Well, there's a couple ways to do it. One is you spend about $5,000 to $7,000, and you have professionals come out, and they install a system designed to create solar hot water on the roof of your house, and it simply takes water from your water supply, routes it up to your roof, and then pumps it back down to your hot water system, and puts the water into the hot water heater already somewhat heated. Maybe not quite as hot as the hot water heats at certain times of year. Sometimes maybe hotter than the heater does it, and your hot water heater becomes a hot water retention device. It simply keeps your water hot, and then that reduces how much energy it has to expend by a great deal. Again, sometimes 30 to 35% for people that take a lot of showers or have a lot of people taking showers. So that's one way to do it, and with a $6,000 investment, I can just about guarantee you, with the increased cost of energy, it will pay itself back in time. Probably not as quickly as you would like, but definitely when you go to sell your home, if you have a solar hot water heating system installed in your home, especially a professional installed system with warranty and things like that, then the people that you sell the house to are going to pay more for it. It's going to set your home apart, so it's a good investment in your home. Now, there's another way to do this, far more low-tech. You tie into that same water line that goes into your hot water heater. This is something most people could either hire a handyman to do or figure out how to do themselves. If you pump your water up on your roof, you get yourself a good, high-quality black garden hose, set it up there in a coil, and run it back down and back into your hot water heater. And that'll basically do the same thing, and if you can't do that for under $100, you're doing something wrong. Even if you hired a local handyman to do it for you, you're still going to get that project done for under $100, and you're going to see the same type, maybe not as much, but you're still going to see maybe a 20% savings. And I've talked to people who have done this in southern climates that have seen massive reductions in their energy costs just from a freaking black garden hose. And it makes you ask the question, why don't we just build our houses that way in the first place? Why don't we just stick a black tube on every roof and run our hot water side through it before it goes to the hot water here? It would be a real easy thing to do. So that's something that you can do. Another thing you can do, kind of a big step up from that, is what they call tied to the grid solar energy systems. Now, the cool thing about these is basically you're just installing some solar panels and an inverter. And the inverter takes the DC power that comes from your solar panels and pipes them to your house. And whenever you have a low energy consumption time where you're not drawing from the grid and the solar panels are producing more than you're using, let's say midday and your AC's down and you're not home and everything's shut down, then that will actually feed back into the grid. In some states, you actually can earn a credit. In other words, the energy company, your electric company, will pay you money for the surplus power, credit against the power you actually draw. Some places, they just take it. But either way, it reduces your costs. This is a lot more expensive to do, but that's only if you have professional installation by brand new equipment. I've seen people maybe on YouTube, looked up some solar systems, and people have done it themselves, learned what's necessary. They've basically paid for the inverter. They've bought and used solar panels. They've done all the work themselves, maybe hired a local handyman or brought in a local expert to do some minor things for them to get sure it's done right. And these people have put systems in like this for under $1,000. So again, there's two ways to do that. One is, you know, somebody comes and does it all for you. Another way is recycle. And I think that there's getting to be a niche out there for the enterprising individual that knows how to build these systems low cost, to use recycled materials, to use solar panels, to find alternative methods to gather materials, and say, I don't think he can be in this like mass production business, right, where he just does like 100 of these a month or something. But what he could do is gather up the materials for a system, and then say, I have one available, and maybe build up some supply, some surplus to these systems, and be able to make a living, or at least a partial living, by just going out and setting people up with these. Because I know that if somebody had that in my area, I would have that guy out looking at my roof today telling me what he could do for me. So that's another idea. Now here's a low-tech idea. This is something that anybody can do, and I believe anybody should do, just for the experience, if you're survival-minded, because even if you don't use it today, having it in the future, if you have a power failure, if we have maybe a grid-level power failure, would be a nice way to be able to cook. It's called a solar oven. A solar oven is basically a box with a glass window on top of it, and reflectors around it. You can build one for $120. I've seen them built out of all kinds of things. I've seen them built out of a pizza box, right? So you can go to, if you don't want to use one that's already greased and stuff, and you can go down to the pizza and go, hey man, can I get a box? I'll probably give you one. And if you go to YouTube and search for solar oven pizza box, you'll see this thing. And this lady makes like little freezer pizzas in this oven. And it was pretty simple. She can't have $5 worth of additional material in it, and it works. You can make them bigger, and I've seen people cook stews and soups and roast pot roast in these things. I've seen them get up between 200 and 300 degrees. In India and Africa, they're used extensively. So this is just something you can do. Now, why would you do this? Now, again, I'm not trying to reduce my carbon footprint. And I hear a lot of people that extol the virtues of solar cooking talk about their carbon footprint. I could give a crap about my carbon footprint. But here's what I know. One, it costs money to run my oven or my stovetop. Okay? Two, it costs $0 to run my solar oven. If I cook 4 or 5 meals a month with a solar oven, I am saving money. I put it back into my pocket, and I can save it and use it to build my cash reserves. I can use it to do whatever I want. So that's a good thing. The other thing that doesn't happen is in the summertime, when it's 100 freaking degrees plus in Texas, I'm not heating up my home with my stovetop or my oven and making my air conditioner work harder. So it's yet another dollar saving. See, I believe that we need to look at the dollar saving side of this thing, because more people will listen to it. More people will get on board with it if we can show how to make this stuff save people money. So solar cooking, solar ovens, I may do a whole show someday just on solar ovens, because I think they're really cool. It's something I'm just getting into and I'm just learning about. But it is one of the coolest things in the world. I mean, even if you know, a lot of times it takes a little longer than cooking in your stove, obviously. But if you only use your solar oven on weekends when you were home, you know, you wake up in the morning, put together a pot of food, stick it in your solar oven in the morning, throw it outside, and eat it for lunch or dinner. And the beautiful thing is these things don't get hot enough to burn food, so a lot of times you can leave them unattended, and if they're not going to overcook your food. They're a great tool, and I recommend you learn about them, because they reduce the amount of excess heat you put in your home at times you don't want it, and they save you money, and they're easy and cheap to build. Next thing that I want to mention, let's talk about getting rid of the sun for just a second. My house is kind of expensive to cool. It's two stories and it's fairly large. However, we save a lot of money because on every single one of our windows we have solar screens. These really dark black screens, and I'm not exactly in love with them because they keep a lot of the light out, the natural lighting out, but you know what? They save us a ton of money, and they make our air conditioner work a lot less hard. So that's something that we're pleased. They came with the house. We were willing to pay more for the house because they were there. And what I do is in the cooler parts of the year, the few 3-4 months that we get that are cool around here, certain ones of those screens where it's beneficial to warm the home or where it's not going to excessively warm the home, because we have pretty mild winters, and we run the AC sometimes in March around here. I remove them for part of the year, and we get more light in during that time. So that's another option that you have. But let me use that to kind of segue into things you can do just to be efficient in your home so that you use less cooling and less heating inside the home, just the normal electrical sources. And if you're using solar, it lets it do it more. One is make sure you insulate the hell out of your roof. I mean, insulation is cheap. It's something most people can pop the crawl space thing and just put more insulation up there themselves, or bring in a pro. We have a company here in Dallas. I'm not going to give their name because they're not paying me to. But they will guarantee you to reduce your electrical costs by at least 20% during the summer if you'll have them come out and put in a radiant barrier and do some other things, some solar vents in your attic and things like that. So check into things like that. Another thing is maintain your heating and air conditioning system. Have somebody come out at least once a year and check your system and make sure it's working at optimum efficiency. It'll cost you $60 on average, is what I've seen across the nation, to have something like that done. And it'll definitely save you more than $60. So make sure your system's running at peak. Use automated thermostats. I mean, see, some of this stuff is just basic common sense. I'm not home, my son's not home, and my wife's not home during the middle of the day. So the air conditioner doesn't need to be as low during the middle of the day. I'm not going to sweat in my house. No matter what anybody says, I want air conditioning, it's going to be 104, 105 degrees today. Folks, I'm not going to go home and sweat. So what I want is, I want my AC running when I'm home tonight, I want it to kick on before we get home. So our automated thermostat will start to cool the house back down about an hour before the first person gets home. And we also don't let our thermostat go really high in the middle of the day, because the reality is, with this kind of heat, during the long days of summer, if you let the temperature of your house go up into the mid-80s or higher, you lose the house, and it takes tremendous amounts of energy to cool it back down. So we let it come up somewhat, and we push it back down right before we come home. Very easy to do. We also use fans. We have some floor fans so that if we're a little bit hot, maybe we don't have to kick the AC down one more rung, we'll turn a fan on. The fans are great because if I'm warm and my wife isn't, and we all know that women are generally cold at times when men aren't, I can turn a fan on and have it blow on me, and I'm comfortable and she's comfortable. So it's not just an energy savings at that point. It's also making life more livable in the home. Lights. You know, I was a big opponent to the compact fluorescents when they came out, because I just thought they looked kind of weird. And I didn't think they looked that good in a ceiling fan where they could be seen. You know what? I went ahead and did it, and quickly I realized they look just like any other light bulb, basically, although they're shaped differently, and they pretty much do the same thing, and I can see, and they work well, and my energy bill went down. The minute I put them in throughout the house, the cost of my electricity went down. They do work. They do save money. So use them. And they also seem to last forever. I haven't had to replace one yet. I did have to replace one because I knocked a lamp over and I broke the damn thing. But other than that, I haven't had to replace one. Also consider using things like oil lamps, kerosene lanterns, things like that. And you can use them, this is going to sound interesting, but a lot of times with different vegetable oils. If you want to be like a biofuel person, there's, instead of worrying about biodiesel and ethanol and things like that, hey, put a little Mazola corn oil into a kerosene lamp. You'd be surprised at how cleanly it'll burn, and it'll produce great light, and it's inexpensive. And, some gardeners maybe even can go out there and produce some crops that they can get some oil out of, right? Now, I watched a thing on YouTube the other day, Chris. So I'm talking about being ridiculous. This small farm was trying to produce their own biodiesel. And they were having to give up about 10 acres to produce enough biodiesel. And biodiesel is far more efficient than ethanol to produce. To run their tractor for 1 month. Well, the amount of food that can come out of that 10 acres is unbelievable. So I don't think that we're ready for biodiesel, at least on a small scale like that yet. But if you planted enough plants to produce a few gallons of oil, you didn't even have to refine the biodiesel. High oil content plants, produce some of your own oil, use press to remove it. Maybe you could run some lamps. I don't know. I mean, that's a little further than I'm going to go, but it's an option. I'll just point out, I also watched a video on YouTube, and I'm going to talk a little more about this with with gardening and producing edibles and why you should do that, but they produce about 6,000 pounds of food from a tenth of an acre a year. So just think of how much food that 10 acres could produce instead of 1 month's supply of biodiesel for a tractor. That's not even a car to go anywhere. That's just a tractor to use on the farm. Before we go into food, though, let's talk about water. Water gets overdone to me, all right? People are so worried about conserving water. It's the most abundant thing on the planet, folks. We need to make sure we're not polluting it, but using it ain't hurting nothing. Let me tell you something. When you use water, and it goes on the ground, or goes through a pipe, and it goes back into the same system, when your water is wasted because it evaporates, well, it's wasted because of the money maybe came out of your pocket to get the water, right? Because you had to pay for it. But you know where it went? It went up in the sky, turns into rain, goes back in the ocean, it goes up in the sky, it gets rained down again, it ends up in a river. Sooner or later, it ends right back up in your faucet. I mean, the same drop, probably not, but hey, you learn about the water cycling, freaking first grade, folks. So we don't need to worry that we're going to run out of water. But we do need to be more useful with what we have, because there's areas that are very dry, that don't have as much water. There's a lot of resources used to get water to them. So being more efficient. And we also, again, I'm always talking about putting money back in your pocket. So one of the best things I believe you can do for water is if it works in your area, have a well put in. Simple well. It doesn't have to be enough of a well to run your house. If you have a well put in to do your irrigation, in a lot of areas, that's really easy to do. You know, you just want to water your gardens and things like that with a well, you can have a well put in for under $1,000. You're not on the city water anymore, and you have an unlimited supply. And should the city water fail, as long as your water is drinkable from your well, you have another source of water. And it would make sense for you to have some type of a manual pump that you can put on your well head if the power goes out. So if you lose both power and water at the same time, that you would be able to still access your water. Not the most likely thing, but very cheap, so why not do it? I am a big proponent of rainwater collection, though. So don't think just because I think that we're not going to run out of water, I think we should just be wasteful and despicable with how we use our water. Look, it rains all the time. Even in dry climates, you get maybe 10 inches of rain a year. That's a lot of rain when you look at the surface area of a roof. And you know what? You don't even have to put a complete gutter system in to do some rainwater collection. You put a couple feet of gutter in, one downspout, and one rain barrel. You could be out under $50, and you could use a couple hundred gallons of irrigation water on your property off your roof. If you set your whole roof up and you're in a place that rains with any consistency, you can collect thousands and thousands of gallons a year that you're not paying for from the city or from the county or whoever you buy your water from. And it's just a simple, easy, low-impact, cost-effective thing that puts money back in your pocket, is good for you, reduces your dependence. It's good all around, so it's something that I recommend. Improving your soil retention is great as well. If you're gardening, which is something I think you should be doing this anyway, because everything you do that makes your garden grow better will improve your soil retention. So I just wanted to say that. And then use passive irrigation. If you collect water, think about ways that you can move the water around and use the pressure of the water just from gravity, let's say, to put it into the different gardening areas that you have. That's going to improve your efficiency. You're going to be able to grow more food. It's going to take less work to do it. Since you're growing more food, you're going to spend less money. Again, it's all about what it makes a difference in your personal life. And I just believe that we'll get further environmentally if we start teaching people how it impacts your own personal life, because it's what people care the most about. Going on with waste, just your garbage, okay? There's two things I believe that you can do to reduce your impact on waste. And one place I think the environmentalists have it right is we just produce too much friggin' garbage. If you want to get sick, go to a landfill. Not just with a stink. Just stand there and look at how much one even very small city produces a day. Watch the trucks come in nonstop, morning, noon, and night. Watch the just tons of waste that go out there. And start to think about how much of it can be reused. We've become a throwaway society. And this is something that I think that one individual does make a difference. Because if you add up the waste that one household produces, it's an impact. It's a big impact. It's a bigger impact than how much gas one family uses. So this is the place I think you can make a difference, so do it. One, recycle. If something is recyclable, your city probably has a recycle program with a bin that you can get. Put it in the bin and let it just be recycled. I mean, my God, how hard is that? So that's something that I think we should all be doing. You can even make money with it if you want to. I don't have the time to haul my aluminum cans to this place to make a few cents off them. If they go up high enough, maybe I will. I mean, metals have been going up. But right now, I mean, it's just about, you know, it's the right thing to do. So do it. The other thing you can do is compost. You know how much of the waste matter that goes into your garbage can is like chopped vegetables and leftover vegetables and parts of vegetables you can't use and eggshells and just different things that can go into a compost heap, orange peel, stuff like that. So compost. Compost will let you improve your soil retention, grow more of your own food, have better soil, and reduce your impact on the environment. And it'll save you money. I don't know if you've been to the store lately, but buying compost is rather expensive because it's kind of a labor-intensive or not resource-intensive process to make compost. So, compost. So just those two things alone can reduce your waste impact and still put some money back in your pocket. And then finally, the big one that I'm huge on, and I think most self-sufficiency-minded people are, is producing edibles for yourself. And what I mean by that is gardening, growing gardens. Like, listen to my podcast on the Three Sisters Garden. What a low-impact way to take an 8-foot area and produce enough food to offset your costs at least during one month or 2 months out of the year. And if you continue to figure out ways to do that, to grow lettuce, container gardens, herbs, anything you can eat. If you want to grow flowers, grow freaking edible flowers. Flowers come, they bloom, they're pretty, they die, they're gone. Well, grow edible flowers. Reduce the amount of your property that's supporting freaking Bermuda grass or St. Augustine grass that doesn't do anything for you or for your home or for the environment. It's just freaking grass. The purpose of grass, the whole purpose of lawns originally, before the, you know, back at the turn of the century, most American lawns were mostly clover. It was so the dog and the kids didn't bring mud in the house. Cover the ground with something that's easy to control, that's not being used to produce food. So what I'm saying is, you know, it still makes sense to do that in a lot of areas, but, you know, use as much of that ground as you can to produce food for yourself, garden. And the reason that gardening makes a lot of sense for the individual, let's again go back to what it means to you personally. One, it will reduce the food expense of your household. And if you can save, and I think anybody that really does this with any level of sincerity, $500 a year on food with a garden, why the hell wouldn't you do it? $500 is $500 that would take a lot of families and keep them from going into bankruptcy. $500 would pay off a credit card with a $500 debt on it that's going to cost you $2,000 to pay off if you pay it off over time. $500 is important. $500 matters to the individual. It does not matter to our economy as a whole. And that's what I'm saying. A lot of these things matter more to you personally and to your family personally than they do to the whole. That's a big reason to start doing them. If we preach that, if you teach that, if you are an environmentalist, if you want these things done, start teaching people that way. Stop talking about the fact that everybody's going to die because nobody believes you. Even if you're right and I'm wrong, nobody believes you. But they do believe that, hey, a garden will save me money. Solar hot water will save me money. That's the things I'm saying. And, you know, on the other side of this, like I said, if you're an environmentalist, why is it good to garden? You reduce pressure on the food supply. Right now, our stupid freaking government has mandated people use ethanol in the billions of gallons. It has taken corn out of the food supply. It has taken farmers who had been growing other food crops and got them to stop doing it and start growing corn because it's worth money. It's driven up the cost of fuel all over the United States and all over the world. We're here in the United States, we grumble about it. In other countries, they are having riots, they're fighting, they're demonstrating because of the price of food. Farmers are sleeping with their crops because people are stealing food because it's gotten so expensive. Okay? That's our freaking biofuels program that we're doing. It's stupid, it's moronic, and it's killing what's left of our agricultural system. People are cutting down. The environmentalists that want these biofuels, some of you know what? They're cutting down the freaking rainforest to grow corn and sorghum. in the Amazon basin because it's worth enough money that they're willing to sacrifice that beautiful forest now. And I know I'm not an environmentalist in the activist sense, but you know what? I do care about the rainforest. I don't want the rainforest cut down. I don't want those ecosystems destroyed. It's not that I don't care. It's just that I have another viewpoint as to how we can make an impact. And it starts with, again, the individual and what it means to them and why it's good for them. It's not about sacrifice. It's about improving your life and your stake in the world and your staking in your own community and your ability to provide for yourself. And to be more independent and to be less dependent on the system. That's what it's really all about. I'm not going to go into biofuels. I'm going to do a whole show on biofuels because I think they're a disaster, and I think people need to know the truth about them at a very deep level. So I'm going to do that on another day. So that's really all my thoughts for today on solar energy and various ways to conserve the cost of energy and reduce your environmental impact. Do want to have what I'm going to call Jack's one-minute presidential update today. I might change it, come up with a different name for it. Just decided here to raise the last second and throw this in. And some I won't do every show, but maybe I'll do it once a week or once every other week or something like that. Just what I see that the two boobus Americanuses that are running for our presidency in the primary parties doing right now, what I saw on the news today. John McCain was standing in front of a bunch of college students and young people and saying that Social Security is a disgrace, that we need to change the way it works, and it's unreasonable for us to continue to expect our young people to pour money into a system that won't be there for them when they retire. Now, what the hell could be wrong with that from a libertarian point of view? I completely agree with it. Here's my problem. Sounds just like George Bush, election one and election two, and nothing got done. And I don't expect anything to get done from McCain either. He was immediately lambasted by the left talking about how he's going to take Social Security away from seniors and blaming seniors for the problem and making seniors out to be the parasite of the system and other crap like that. Not what the guy was saying at all. But it doesn't matter what he was saying because he's not going to freaking do anything about it because no one's serious about fixing this problem yet. Because remember, the Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid system is in a $53 trillion deficit over the next 40 freaking years. It's going to go broke. And when it goes broke, whoever's in office at the time is going to get the blame, even though it's already done. It's already been done. The system's already been raped and pillaged. So we got McCain out there talking about, we need to do this for you, right? For their young people, I guarantee you that within the next week, to stave off this attack that he's got going on himself, you know what he's going to do? He's going to go in front of a bunch of old people and talk about how Social Security needs to be preserved for both them and future generations. And he's going to pander to the AARP. He's going to say whatever he thinks he needs to say to get elected, but when he gets elected, it's a poison pill to cut Social Security. Nobody really wants to do it, and nobody's going to do it, and nobody's ever done it. And it isn't going to happen. And if Obama gets elected, he's not going to do it either. All right? It's just going to sit there until it blows up. So there's the non-starter BS moment of the week so far for John McCain. Barack Obama. Don't think I'm leaving him out, folks, because I like him even less, just because idealistically, he's further away from me. I wouldn't say McCain's closer, I'm just saying Barack's further away. Barack Obama stood in front of a women's conference with Hillary Clinton presenting a united front, talking about the need for new leadership and new fresh ideas, and Hillary throwing her full support behind Barack Obama. Okay, fine, I'm going to let that go. I don't really care. I expect that. I think anybody would expect that. But then when Barack Obama took the stage after Hillary gave him this ringing endorsement, one of the things he said to his supporters is, let's help the Clintons pay off their campaign debt. I want you to not just donate money to me, donate money to pay off Hillary Clinton's campaigns. In fact, I've already donated the maximum amount that I'm allowed to by law to do that, and so has Michelle. Yeah! You know what? This is why our country's in the toilet, people! God almighty! Here's the reality. I'm not going to talk about Hillary Clinton's politics, okay? God knows they're far away from what I want for our country. But let's just look at it from a freaking consequences standpoint. For months toward the end of the election, the primary election, everybody said, mathematically, this woman cannot win. It is impossible. So what did she do? She loaned her own campaign money, she borrowed more money, she asked for money, and she kept spending money like water. This sums up the freaking socialist mentality of the Democratic Party today in the United States of America. What is Barack Obama asking his supporters to do? Remove the consequence from her action on her behalf, even though she knew what she was doing when she did it. She spent the money, she blew the money, and the Clintons have hundreds of millions of dollars. Okay? She could pay off the debt herself, in my opinion, not because I don't like her. Okay? If it was Ron Paul, who I was a huge supporter of, and if Ron Paul blew all his money, borrowed money, and even though toward the end we knew there's no way this guy's going to win, he's not going to win the nomination. Still supported, not going to win the nomination. If he had overspent, number one, he wouldn't be asking anybody else to bail him out. That's the kind of guy he is. Number three, he wouldn't have done it in the first place, because he's not going to ask anybody to bail him out. But number three, I'd say don't bail him out either. All right? So there's your two boobus Americanist presidential moments of the freaking day from Chad Spirico, and hopefully that gets you thinking. Now, what's the solution to the presidential problem? I really don't know. I'm more and more thinking I'm going to be going ahead and voting for Bob Barr. I think he's going to be on the ballot down here in Texas. I'm not going to tell you to vote for. You vote for who you want. Just don't believe either one of these clowns when they tell you how different they are from the other person, because they're really not. And I hope you've enjoyed today's podcast. If you have any ideas for the show, any new things you think we can do, any questions, any comments, any input, please go by the blog, thesurvivalpodcast.com. Again, that's thesurvivalpodcast.com. Go there, look up the episode you want to comment on, and comment on it, or just comment anywhere you want to. I'll get it, I'll talk to you, and I'll figure out what we can do to get your ideas either incorporated or answered. Thank you, have a great day.
You can scream, and you can holler, it really doesn't matter, 'cause it all gets spent.